Basic Brewing Radio is brought to you in part this week by the American Homebrewers Association. The AHA says get ready for Big Brew. Each year in honor of National Homebrew Day, the American Homebrewers Association celebrates AHA Big Brew on the first Saturday in May. This year, throughout the day on May 2nd, hundreds of bars, breweries, shops, and clubs all over the country will host their local communities to brew on-site for a national same-day homebrewing session. Find a Big Brew event near you. Visit homebrewersassociation.org and click events to learn more. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 30th, 2015. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, it's a ginger trifecta. We'll sample beers brewed with ginger from Steve Wilkes, homebrewer Dan McCarthy, and Apple Blossom Brewing Company. Three different approaches to bringing the fresh taste of ginger to your beer. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on the Google Plus, too. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and go to our website. Click on our associate link on the right-hand side of the page on basicbrewing.com. That'll take you back to Amazon where you can shop as you normally do. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. And if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who's done so already. Let's take a look into the mailbag. The first note actually comes from Twitter, in fact. In the past episodes of Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video, Steve and I sampled a split batch of my cream ale, half with the US05 yeast and half with what we Americans call Nottingham yeast. Well, Nick on Twitter says, if you want to feel all cultured, us locals pronounce it Nottingham or Nottingham if you're from the south of England. So Nottingham or Nottingham with a silent H, Nick says. Well, Nick might say silent H, maybe. I don't know. But I appreciate that, Nick. Of course, you know, the danger with trying to mix the quote-unquote proper pronunciation of individual words in with one's native accent is that you risk sounding it like, you know, like it's an affectation of some sort. And it reminds me of a skit a while back on Saturday Night Live when the guest star was Jimmy Smits.
Okay, all right. Who had the enchiladas?
Oh, yes, that's me.
Okay, we also have a combination bean burrito and chili con carne.
Well, I had a burrito and huevos rancheros.
Oh, there's no huevos. They must have screwed up.
Antonio, you're welcome to have my chili con carne.
No, thanks. Say, you guys really like Latino food, huh?
Well, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Clip courtesy of Hulu.com, used as social commentary. I'm actually torn. Do I say Nottingham and sound like a Yank or Nottingham and sound more authentic to the residents of that area maybe and risk sounding like a jerk over here? So I guess it's either Yank or jerk. I'll try it both ways with this next letter, and you guys let me know what you think. I get an email from Richard, and Richard says, just finished the cream ale / Nottingham yeast episode and found it very interesting in that I have been brewing a cream ale for a couple of years. I've always used Nottingham dry yeast for this recipe, but my most recent batch only had US05 available, so I used it. Wow, what a difference. Not just as full-flavored or mouthfeel. Just to confirm my suspicion, I split a batch of New Albion with your recipe, with half using US05 and the other using Nottingham. Much better tasting beer with Nottingham. I used US05 as my standard yeast on a lot of beers, but we'll be trying more different yeasts now, particularly Nottingham. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate that. Which sounds better, Nottingham or Nottingham? In looking at the comments about the video podcast, several of you noted that the color of the Nottingham sample looked a bit darker. I guess it was a trick of the lights. Because I swear, from our side of the glasses, and when we held them up, the two samples looked very similar. So I don't know if it was the video lights shining on them or that made the difference or what. But I've poured more samples since and paid more attention in different light. And the US05 does look lighter in color. So I don't know if that's just the yeast still being in suspension or what. It seems like there are always some fun surprises when you do experiments. I'm planning on doing another batch of the cream ale, and this time I'm going to be doing it on my electric brew-in-a-bag system from High Gravity in Tulsa. How's that for a segue into an ad? We're really happy to have Desiree and Dave from High Gravity as regular sponsors on the show now. And they now have three different electric brew-in-a-bag systems to choose from. There is the 240-volt 10-gallon system with the pump, which is what I have, the 120-volt 5-gallon system with a pump, and the 120-volt 5-gallon system with no pump in the true tradition of brew-in-a-bag. These systems are designed and built by Dave at High Gravity, and I'm having a lot of fun with mine. You can check them out at highgravitybrew.com, and while you're there, remember, for ingredients and many other products, High Gravity offers $7.99 flat-rate shipping. That's highgravitybrew.com. And again, if you want to see Steve and me play with the system that I have, you can go to youtube.com/highgravitybrew. Well, now let's get into talking about beers brewed with ginger. And I'm trying something a little different this week. The show is in three sections. We'll end up at Apple Blossom Brewing in Fayetteville, Arkansas, with two of the owners, Daniel Smith and Sammy Stevenson, to talk about a beer called Soulless Ginger. That I like quite a bit, and my wife likes quite a bit as well, which is important. The middle section is with homebrewer Dan McCarthy and his ginger wasabi beer. And we start out with our own Steve Wilkes on the porch sampling his ginger-based beer. Now, I have to say that Steve and I got pretty silly while we were talking about his beer. This is after we sampled the other the other porch experiments. And to tell you the truth, I cut out most of what we said. When we got so silly. Just imagine what's on the cutting room floor. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to the porch.
Thank you, James.
And, oh, I'm sorry. And I forgot to point the microphone your way. I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
Okay. Now, we're going to talk about ginger today. Brewing with ginger, and the biggest challenge for us two about talking about brewing with ginger is
not to make Gilligan's Island jokes.
That's right. My question is, if you were to make a good pairing with a dinner, say if you were making, you know, a Gilligan's Island themed dinner, you would make a ginger beer like this one, which would be perfect, and then a coconut porter. Ooh. and then pair that with fish dishes.
Absolutely, that's a great idea. let me make a note of that.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Okay, and then grass skirts for everybody. Okay, so this is your part of the show. I'm gonna try to do three segments to this show. This is your part of the show. What? Tell me about this beer. No. Steve's looking for the beer.
I'm trying to find the recipe.
I'll edit this part out. Now I'll give tasting notes while you're looking for the recipe. How about that?
Okay. Well, this beer is it's 8 pounds. It's 8 pounds of Munich Light malt.
And how big of a batch?
Oh, five-gallon batch. And 2 pounds of malted red wheat. And that is the grain bill. Mm. So very simple beer. The hop bill for this is 1 ounce of Chinook at 1 hour. So I brewed for 60 minutes, okay, as opposed to your 30-minute nonchalant brewing techniques that you have.
That's in the you're talking about the past.
I'm in the past. 1 ounce of Tettnanger and 1 ounce of Hallertauer. Tettnanger at 30 minutes and 1 ounce of Hallertauer at 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then that was fermented on top of USO5,
right,
as is my wont. But then, on the secondary, I racked it after 2 weeks. I racked it onto 8 ounces of fresh ginger.
Eight ounces.
8 ounces.
For those not familiar, that's half a pound.
That's a bunch of ginger.
Now, how did you prepare that?
Did you
start out with a raw root?
Yes, I used the raw. Yeah. So I got fresh ginger, the freshest ginger I could find. God, it's killing me not to make these jokes. So I'm like a drug addict trying to quit.
You can make one.
No. Stop me. God, stop me. Anyway, so I got the ginger and I peeled her. Right down to the nubbin. Anyway, I peeled 8 ounces. I peeled some ginger. I sliced it very thin, very thinly, so that you have lots of surface area. Because you want a lot of surface area when you're talking about ginger. You know what I'm saying here. And then I stuffed it down. Down into the carboy. I did not pre-sanitize the ginger with any kind of vodka because I knew it would be on a secondary. To come back down to something above middle school humor. Anyway, so I racked the beer onto the ginger. I've got the giggles. So at any rate, there's a bunch of ginger in this beer. Here's the interesting thing. I didn't boil half the wort.
What?
What? So I did a split boil in my house.
A ginger split.
A ginger split boil. And I had two boil vessels. And I decided not to boil half of the wort.
Why?
So, because I was really lazy.
We'll put lazy in quotes.
Lazy in quotes. So, actually, you know what? It just happened. I mean,
so you didn't boil the second runnings? Is that the thing?
I did sanitize them. I brought them up to 160 and I let them set for a while.
Okay.
And so I didn't have any issues with unsanitized wort going, you know, into the yeast and all that mm-hmm. kind of, all the problems that could ensue. So I brought half of the wort up to 160 and let it set for about 15 minutes. Excuse me. Then I boiled the other half, which is all the hops went in the other half, and was boiled as per normal. Then I blended the two worts back together and allowed them to ferment themselves out and just carry on as though nothing unusual had happened. And the fear was that the beer would be cloudy and not very drinkable, but I don't think it's cloudy at all.
It's a little. I mean, it's not crystal. It's not crystal clear if you filtered it.
No. But it's no more or less clear or cloudy than any other.
It's standard homebrew haze, I would say.
Yeah, Gabby haze.
Okay, so let me get this straight.
I put the lime in the coconut.
So did you? Was it like a party gal thing where you took the first runnings and you boiled that, and then you took the second runnings? You only brought that up to 160.
Yes. Okay. That's exactly what I did.
Okay, so it's like a party gal.
Yeah.
Again, let me repeat. You took the first runnings. You did basically a standard beer with that, boiling for 60 minutes, adding the hop additions, all that.
Right.
The second runnings you took, and you put it into a pot, and you brought it up to 160, and you held it,
mm-hmm.
to sanitize it, mm-hmm. pasteurize it, mm-hmm. one would say.
One could say.
One could say, and I did. And then you, and then you, there's spit on the microphone. There's, and then you combine those two after chilling.
Yes.
Pitch the yeast.
Yes.
And then later, after fermentation was done, you put it on to half a pound of shaved ginger root.
Yes.
And how long did it sit on the ginger root?
10 days.
Okay.
And then I bottled. And I bottled with a half a cup of honey rather than corn starch or corn sugar.
Right. It's really good.
That's a good.
I mean,
thank
I it's really, when you told me that you put the beer on half a pound of ginger, I was like, holy smokes, that's going to be like just taking spoonfuls of ginger out of the spice rack.
Yeah.
But it's it tastes like a ginger snap to me.
It does. If it had the molasses thing going, a little brown sugar, you'd have a ginger snap. But this is just very clean. I'll tell you my inspiration for the big, heavy ginger, like a bunch of ginger.
That was later in her career.
That's later in her career. When she...
Never mind.
Became a spokesman for Nutrisystem.
Your inspiration...
was Ken Schramm's ginger mead.
Ah.
Which is like getting hit by a truckload of ginger. And I really wanted that big ginger mm-hmm. experience. And so... that's what I was after. And actually, I wish it had more ginger. I wish it was even more gingery.
Well, that's where you and I might part ways.
That's okay.
Because I think this is very well about... I mean, it's ginger. It's all about the ginger.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not like a ginger ale.
No.
Because there is... It's not a soda pop.
Right.
There's a malt backbone, which I... attribute to the cookie experience, although now that you say a ginger snap does have a molasses-y kind of thing, mm-hmm. which makes me think, what if you were to do like a Belgian double and put a Belgian double on like half a pound of ginger?
Oh yeah, man,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, ginger is just a great flavor. And it could be, you know, I read threads where people say, well, I put 2 ounces on and oh my God, the ginger almost killed me. I don't know. But I think this is really good with this amount of ginger. I agree you could get carried away with it and have too much, but then again, it could also be that how you bring it into balance, just like any other ingredient, would be important too. So I'm very happy with it. I'm happy with the experiment of the no boil, you know,
yeah,
business.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that happens when you drink too much while you're brewing.
Or you're quote-unquote lazy.
Yeah.
No, it's really, really good.
Good.
And the hops, the hopping doesn't conflict with the ginger. It's not like, mm-mm. you know, I think it might... either complement or accentuate the ginger, if nothing else.
I think the beer is, of course, it's my beer, and so I'm. Can you hear that?
You're breaking your arm.
Yeah, but I mean, the beer is in good balance with itself. Neither the hops nor the ginger, you know, kill each other. Or, and I think that the Munich gave it a really nice maltiness that.
Maybe that adds to the cookie.
Right.
Thing.
Exactly. So, you know, maybe this beer using 2-row. Would have been different and not as good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, the choice of base malt is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Clink. Click the plastic cups. Well done.
I could drink a bunch of that.
And you shall.
And I shall.
Dan McCarthy, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you sent us an unusual beer, and I'm both intrigued and afraid of unusual beers.
Absolutely. I can see that.
having made some myself that were good and some that weren't so good. So, you know, I from my own experience, I can say that, you know, sometimes unusual beers work out really well, and sometimes, you know, it's worth a shot, but... But I'm glad that most of the beers that that people send us are good. They're good, or you wouldn't have put it in the mail, right?
Yeah. I worried there for a bit. I got your email saying to mail it out there right when I got a big deep freeze up here where we froze the pipes. So I had to wait a little bit before I could send it without hit the bottle freezing in the mail. So.
Yeah, we did. I did have a frozen bottle not too long ago.
Yeah,
that was a first. so you sent us a ginger wasabi beer.
Yeah.
Where did the inspiration for this come from?
Well, this inspiration came from actually a bet. One of my friends bet me that I couldn't make a wasabi beer, and I set out to prove him wrong. And so he bet me in the winter, so I waited till the summer to do it when I was just trying to fiddling around some experimentation. And to try and get it, I knew, like, with sushi, you use ginger with wasabi, so I planned on adding some ginger in there as well. So at the time, I bought a little tub of powdered wasabi, and I just kind of did some experimentation. I had a ginger beer on keg that I was just putting it in there slowly, taste testing what a good level would be. And that's where I got the level where I wanted it to, and that's when I brewed the beer.
Oh, okay. So you actually just stirred it in an existing beer and tasted it as you went along?
Yeah, I had a light ginger beer, and I thought that would be a good base to try and work off of. So it ended up working all right. So
yeah, and to show my my state of mind, it didn't hit me until halfway through the tasting that ginger and wasabi would go with sushi. So I guess if you were to make a ginger wasabi sake, now you're talking. Now it's the sushi trifecta there. You got the rice, you got
that
the ginger, and the wasabi.
Yeah. That's just liquid sushi right there.
Yeah. Now, when you start adding eel or, raw salmon, that's where I might draw the line. But,
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to try those sort of experiments yet in my beer, but maybe one day.
So what did you use as the base of this particular beer?
Well, at the time, I've been doing all grain mashes, and I've been using the runnings just to try and do some experiments. So at the time I was doing a Heather Ale, and I used the second runnings from that batch, and then I kind of fortified it a bit because it came out about 10:20 after the second runnings. I fortified it with some liquid malt extract just to get it up to around a 10:40.
So what was the character of that wort before you added the extract?
The wort was 6 pounds mutton pale ale, 1/2 pound Breese pale ale, 2-row, and 10 ounces of caramel malt. And it was pretty roasty. It was a good copper color brown, sort of a little bit of biscuity. It turned out really well as a Heather Ale too, honestly. So then I added about 22 ounces of light malt extract as well to just kind of get it up to a good temp.
And this was a 2-gallon batch.
Yeah, this ended up starting out as a 2-gallon batch. After primary fermentation, there's enough waste in there that it ended up being about a gallon bottled. So.
And what was the hop character? What was the hops that you used?
For that 2-gallon batch, I used 1/2 ounce of UK East Kent Goldings at 60 minute, and I used 1/2 ounce of Amarillo at 10 minutes.
Okay. And then, I mean, the big question is, how did you integrate the ginger and wasabi, and how much did you put of each?
Well, the ginger beer I'd done before that, it was, let me pull out the right recipe here. It was 2 ounces of ginger at 10 minutes. So I kind of wanted to get to that same level of character. So I used 1/2 ounce of ginger right at the very end of the boil. And I just use fresh ginger. I just dice it up, and I remove the skin from it because I find that gives it a little bit of an astringent character to it.
Okay.
And I also added – I found out that from just doing tastings that an 1/8 ounce of a teaspoon for a 4-ounce taster was a good amount of wasabi. So that goes up to about 8 teaspoons for 2 gallons.
So 8 teaspoons for 2 gallons?
Yep, teaspoons.
And that's 2 gallons. And that's powdered ginger. Or powdered wasabi.
Powdered wasabi, yes. It was a little canister I found just in the ethnic foods aisle of the nearby grocery store. So.
And did the wasabi go in the boil as well?
Yeah, that went in right about the same time, so right around 10 minutes to the end of boil, just enough to get some extract or some flavor extract out of it, and I just let it there.
Just curious, did you taste the powdered wasabi by itself?
I did. It was pretty strong, to say the least. It was it was made in the U.S., so it was just horseradish. It wasn't actual wasabi, but most of the wasabi we have here in the United States is horseradish anyways, so it gave me the same character that I'm used to from wasabi from sushi. So.
And there's something about wasabi that's different. The heat that you get from wasabi is different from, say, a jalapeno or the capsaicin from a hot pepper. That stuff, to me, it just goes straight up into my head.
Yeah, it seems like wasabi just kind of lingers on your tongue a bit and goes down your throat. It doesn't go up. I find, like you said, the capsaicin kind of goes up into the sinuses a bit and warms you up. But horseradish seems to hit a little bit differently.
I have the opposite reaction. We may be plumbed differently. I get the capsaicin on my tongue and in my mouth and, the heat receptors there. And then if I eat too much wasabi or horseradish, it goes straight up in my nose and makes my my eyes water and is just a lot more painful to me than the red pepper kind of heat.
Yeah. Yeah, if you get too much wasabi in there, it really hits you a little bit harder than a pepper would, I think.
So you sent the bottles down when they were no longer in danger of freezing, and Steve and I, Steve Wilkes and I sat on our my porch and sampled a few beers, as people have already heard from our conversation about his ginger beer. And so here's how that went. Okay, Steve, you were tasting a beer from Dan McCarthy up in Michigan. Now, if I were to say to you, ginger wasabi beer, what would you think?
No way. not now, not ever.
I think that we've tried many beers at Club Night,
yes,
at the Homebrew Conference, and some of them and I always come back to the curry beer.
Ah.
Which we tried and I enjoyed, mm-hmm, in the little 1 ounce sample. And I'm glad I had it, and I thought it was really tasty and nice, but I would never have a pint of it.
No. It would be nice as a cooking ingredient, but not something I would ever drink. I'm talking about the curry beer.
Right. So in concept. Right. And there were some other beers where there was a thing where Crispy Fry, his club, they did a pairing where they did... 1 year they cooked food with certain ingredients and then had a beer with those certain ingredients as well beside it, and that was an interesting concept again, mm-hmm, and I'm glad I tried it, but it's not something I would drink every day.
Yeah.
So I would file ginger wasabi beer theoretically,
right,
into that thing where, oh my God, somebody put that into a beer. I wonder what that's like.
Yeah.
Okay, I tried it. I can file that away. That I've had that.
This would be like the Lone Ranger of beers, the chemo wasabi beer.
You went there.
I had to.
So, it's a ginger themed show. Mm-hmm. Now, after tasting the beer, however, after saying all that, prejudicing everybody against ginger wasabi beer,
mm-hmm,
what are your impressions?
It's pretty darn good. I get a very tiny hint of horseradish, which is what wasabi is. Mm-hmm. Just the faintest hint of it, but it's really nice. And mm-hmm, the beer has a nice nutty quality to it. It's really a very nice beer.
Do you get ginger?
I get ginger, but not a lot. Nothing like like my ginger beer.
Now we have to say that we just sampled Steve's half a pound of ginger beer.
Yeah.
So you know that may have knocked our perceptions off, but the beer is what, dark copper? Would you say?
Yeah, dark copper, and it's got a really nice. It's kind of a nutty quality to the flavor. Do you? I'm getting a look of not quite.
Well, I'm searching for that. I'm searching. It didn't.
I get a little nutty. Bit of toffee.
Toffee, yeah,
ever so slightly.
Yeah.
So, and I don't even know what you know. I don't know how it's made. I don't know what it's made of. But
well, it was the second runnings of a Heather Scotch Ale.
Oh well, the Scotch Ale.
So yeah, you're right. That. You're probably right on.
Yeah, but it's really nice. It's not too heavy. I just never would have. You couldn't hand me this and say, "Tell me what the secret ingredient is," and I would never guess wasabi, ever.
To me, when I first tasted it, and this is usually a negative word in my beer vocabulary, but grassiness. To me, there was a little bit of like fresh cut grass kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Which normally, if it's overpowering and like an IPA, would be negative to me.
Right.
I find it too harsh. But in this instance, it's well balanced by the malt, and I find it refreshing.
This is a very refreshing beer and very drinkable beer. I'm just, you know, I'm still kind of getting over the shock of drinking a ginger wasabi beer and not going, holy cats, where do I dump this? This is good.
Yeah.
So, wow. I would say the effect of the wasabi, I think, is so minimal that I'm not sure how beneficial it is. I don't know. It's one of those ingredients that if I didn't know it was there, I don't know that I would miss it, but maybe it adds something to the final flavor that wouldn't be the same if it wasn't there.
Well, let me postulate a parallel example. Usually when you have wasabi, it's with you're at a sushi place.
Yep.
Sushi is generally fatty, right? Or can often be fatty. And the wasabi, in my mind, along with the soy sauce, is kind of to balance
and
and
the pickled ginger.
And the pickled ginger. Well, yes, exactly. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
But the wasabi is there as a balance to kind of take that fatty edge off of the sushi. And you know when you've had too much when it goes straight up your nose and your eyes water. But when you do the wasabi in the proper amount, it's not like just eating a dollop of wasabi. It is part of the overall experience.
Yeah, definitely. This is just a super, super well balanced beer. I'm really kind of hungry for some yellowfin tuna. You got any handy?
No. I got some frozen salmon in the fridge.
You got a California roll anywhere in your pocket there?
I'm just happy to see it. No, it's very good. I think, and I do get the ginger. I think I do get the ginger. It's kind of a refreshing kind of a thing. More along the lines of like, along the lines of a ginger and a ginger ale.
Yeah, one of the things I like about this beer is that it finishes just a little bit sweet. Mm. So you get the wasabi, I think, what I taste of it, and again, I can detect just a little bit of horseradish, and it seems to have kind of a dulling effect. Like if it were just the ginger, it would come to a big point. So imagine this. All you listeners, imagine a big point. It's rising to a point, and then you take a Japanese sushi knife and you slice it off. And that's what the wasabi does. It kind of levels it all out.
That's what I would have said.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
But the long and the short of it is, and the shorter with the knife is that it's a tasty beer. I would
order a second pint of this.
Absolutely. This is a beer I definitely drink by the pint load.
There you go. So good job, Dan.
Yeah, definitely.
So you'll be pleased to know that we enjoyed the beer quite a bit.
Yeah, I was really excited that how it turned out. Everyone I've had tasted, they all kind of had that same, like, I don't know what I'm getting into face or thought, but everyone seemed to have liked it so far, which I was pretty surprised about.
So, the ginger and the wasabi character is not in your face. You know, you're not punching us in the face with these flavors, which is one reason why I like the beer. I like that it's, you know, those flavors kind of go in and they add to the complexity without over-dominating the rest of the beer. Have you let anybody try it blind to see if they can actually pick out those flavors?
No, we didn't. I brewed that last summer. So we had our first taste testing when we had my friend who had actually given me the bet. He came down around Christmas and we did a taste testing there. He knew it was coming though. So he didn't, it wasn't any blind tasting, unfortunately, but if I ever do brew it again, because those are actually the last two bottles I sent you. If I ever do brew it again, maybe I'll trick some people into doing some blind tastings there.
Well, I've got one left, so maybe I can do that here.
Yeah.
But how did the flavors change over time in the bottle?
I think it certainly mellowed. I listened to the audio you sent me, and I listened to it with my girlfriend, and she had tasted it in December, and she made it sound like... She said it sounded like it was less of a in-your-face wasabi than it was then. It was much more potent, I would say, is a good word for it, in December, but it still was a good balance. It seemed to have balanced out really well even after 6 months. So,
of course, we just came off of tasting Steve's ginger beer, which was, you know, was in-your-face ginger. And so that, yeah. That might have dulled our taste buds a bit for the second one. I'll have to taste.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll taste the second beer on its own and see how my perceptions are. But the bottom line is it was a success. If you had asked me to predict the success factor of a ginger wasabi beer before I had had that beer, you know, I would have been more skeptical. But so good job.
Thank you. I'm kind of excited to see who bets me the next ingredient and see where that goes.
a blind stab at the spice aisle, you know, at the spice rack in the store. I was looking through some. They had a display of different ingredients, in sort of a Hispanic section of the store. The last time I was in there, and there are all kinds of different peppers and all kinds of different spices and leaves of different plants. And it's that kind of inspiration that is exciting to me of looking at that stuff and wondering, you know, how to blend those. Unusual, unknown flavors into something brand new, like you've done.
Yeah.
Are there any other odd projects that you have done or are working on?
Well, this year I have claimed it the year of the gruit, so I've been doing a lot of experiments with different herbal beers. It started with a mead that I used, or I guess it would be a metheglin that used the herbs from Ricola mints. So if I ever get sick now, I have a very interesting mead that will help me heal. And I right now I'm planning on doing a smash experiment with single malt, single herb. So I'm trying to figure out the right herbs I want to taste for that. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So the Ricola thing. Was it kind of anisey or licorice-y or what was that?
It actually had. Let me pull out. It has peppermint, lemon balm, hyssop, elderflower, marshmallow, and horehound.
Hmm.
So it has a very good herbal note to it, and I backswinged it a bit, so it's got a little bit of a honey to it. So it's really so far. I just bottled it last week, and it's tasting pretty good so far. And I'm sure it's only going to get better with age. So.
Oh, very cool. But it sounds like you like having fun with your brews, and that's a characteristic that I will applaud and encourage.
Thank you. I'm really liking the herbal mixtures. I'm trying to get. I keep joking that I wanted to get to like my 23 herbs and spices for a good gruit, and that's what this year's all about. So,
going Colonel Sanders quite a bit further than.
Yeah, exactly.
He's only got 11 herbs and spices, so.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. This has been a lot of fun, Dan. I appreciate your sending us the beer. And if somebody challenges you again and you meet their challenge, I hope you'll keep us in mind.
Oh, you'll be the first to know.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
So, Daniel and Sammy, introduce yourselves, first of all.
I'm Daniel Smith.
And Sammy Stevenson.
Okay, so we know how you sound now. Now, I've been here a few times, and every time I come, we talk about good beer. And this time we're talking about ginger beers. And the beer is called Soulless Ginger. Is that correct? And Daniel, do you have a connection with this beer?
Yeah, I guess I am the soulless ginger in question. It was pretty entertaining. My business partners came to me at a meeting and said that they had an idea for a beer name and wondered if I would be okay with it, which I was delighted. I think it's hilarious.
You are redheaded, I guess.
For your viewers, I am definitely, no one has ever accused me of being anything other than a redhead. My beard's red, my head's red, my eyebrows are red.
So soulless ginger, on the face of it, may not be the most generous of stereotypes, but where does that come from?
I guess it really comes probably from South Park originally, as where the joke was popularized.
It's probably been around in memes and stuff for a long time. And it kind of ties in, I think, too, with the character of the beer being like unapologetically strong.
Yeah.
in the ginger domain, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where ginger's being soulless came from originally, but it's certainly something that, from the truth, right? It's certainly something that has been brought to my attention at least for the last 10 years, so there you go. I've always embraced it. I say, without the lack of soul, it frees me up to do all the things I really want to do in life. So.
There you go. You're the perfect business partner right here.
Exactly. We send him out to collect all past due bills. That's a great job.
Okay, so name aside, where did the recipe come from? How'd you come up with it?
We had always, I think, wanted to make both a ginger ale and a ginger beer, and so that was just kind of where it came from. There got developed by our head brewmaster and the rest of us. It went through quite a few different iterations. There was a time whenever we added powdered ginger kind of on the backside post fermentation, and we kind of started out with X amount of ginger and then just started adding 5 or 10 pounds of ginger each batch until we got to like, all right, that's kind of ludicrous, and then and stepped it back, and have since also eliminated all the powdered ginger. We really prefer to do the fresh, but because the powdered ginger could be added post fermentation. It allowed us to kind of be able to adjust the ginger levels afterwards, but so once we got it down on the front end, then it's just all fresh ginger that goes into the boil.
So give us an idea of the scale. How much ginger is there? How big?
22 pounds.
In how big of a batch?
A 10-barrel batch. So wow. We start out with 11.75 barrels pre-boil. Mm-hmm. So post-boil is about 11 and a quarter. And that's 22 pounds of fresh, like hand-peeled ginger, and then we just mince it up real coarse, put it in big socks, and throw them in the boil towards the end of the boil.
Ah, so it's before fermentation.
Yes, absolutely. And during boil, we want to make sure we get a boil in on anything that might still be alive, either if we missed a piece of skin or just any kind of bacteria that may be inside the ginger or whatever. We want to give it a little bit of boil time before siphoning off the wort to the
It's a good point, and it doesn't. The boil doesn't deaden the freshness of the ginger flavor, or the fermentation doesn't do anything to it. At least at that amount,
it probably still scrubs out some of it, but it definitely comes through as fresh ginger. I can definitely detect a difference between the flavors we get from the adding the fresh ginger to the boil versus adding powdered ginger. It's definitely significantly different. And now we also found we use a little bit of crystal malt, but we also use a fair amount of rye and almost no hops, and we find that rye actually lifts the ginger quite a bit. That kind of tangy, spicy flavor of the rye, and we use a Belgian ale yeast, and all those seem to work really well in concert with that ginger flavor.
Wow. So what's the IBU level, or what kind of hops do you use?
We use just a little bit of Hercules to bitter, and that's it. It's pretty much all the astringency and aroma and everything come from the ginger and the rye.
Ginger and the rye. Sounds like a book, but it's not.
Yeah. That's me, the ginger and the rye. It is actually one of my favorite beers that we brew here the least favorite part of it is peeling the ginger, but it's one of the things that we still all do together as owners. As the business has gotten a little bit bigger, we don't spend as much time together in the brewery, and there's so much ginger to be peeled that everybody kind of has to come and pitch in, and it's a monthly activity now of peeling about 20 pounds.
We start out with about 30 to get down to 22 after it's been all peeled and grated.
So it's all of us sitting around peeling ginger for quite a while. It's a group misery brings everybody together. You know what I mean?
something like a sewing circle.
Quilting bee in the modern time. Now, do you just use paring knives or what?
Spoons, actually. Backside of a spoon. Ginger's pretty soft, and you really don't want to damage it or take too much of the material off. If you were using a paring knife or something like that, I think you would take a lot of the mass of the ginger away. But just a spoon, just using the edge of the spoon, really takes most of the skin off pretty easily.
Huh. I'll be darned. You can tell I've never
A little bit tedious,
ginger.
But
we're,
it works
we're kicking
well.
Around ideas like putting a brush and a drill and spinning it and seeing if we can cut down the time.
We're trying to come up with more efficient ways, for sure.
And we're still trying things with the ginger too. We've got a firkin going now where we tried just a little bit of a dry hop with the Sriracha Ace to see what a kind of lemon hop aroma would do in the ginger. We're thinking about doing an imperial soulless ginger, maybe with a little bit of jasmine and some candied ginger flavors in there. But yeah, as far as the soulless ginger, it's pretty well set at this point.
It's my wife's favorite beer from here. In fact, I brought my little growler. I'm going to fill it up before I go home to make her happy. But so do you have to wear any kind of gloves, or does it have any effect on your skin? Or
it definitely burns your hands, and if you get any of it in your eye, as we all sit around the table and peel, there the little screams from one place or another as somebody gets a good drop in the eye, because it certainly burns. I have taken to wearing safety glasses while peeling the ginger. Believe it or not. And if you don't wear gloves, your hands definitely burn a little afterwards. But it's mild. It's like maybe preparing peppers in your kitchen. You might get a little burning in the cuticles, that kind of thing.
And also, the head brewer is actually allergic to ginger.
Oh, no.
So ginger brew days are a built-in holiday for him. He just stays out of the brew house.
It's the one day he doesn't have to
take care of it.
It doesn't really have to do anything. He doesn't get a peel of the ginger. Doesn't have to carry it. Doesn't have to do anything. So
he's allergic to ginger.
The air quotes are flying. Now, do you have to chop it up at that point?
We use a RoboCoop. Which is just like a commercial grade.
Yeah, so basically
blender.
It's minced.
Just really, really coarse chop.
And then hop bags or some kind of bags.
Yeah, we use the same thing. It's like a massive tea bag kind of deal, and we usually get about two of those. Toss them right in the boil.
Wow. And what gravity were you talking about? I don't think we've talked about that.
Oh, starting gravity is around 13.5 Plato.
which is, I'm thinking specific gravity, 56.
I don't. We've done everything with hydrometers and Plato from the beginning, so I'm actually pretty bad about converting that stuff.
And my math. I was a journalism major in college, and I clipped out of my math. I used to be pretty good, but.
And here it is. You know, people said you wouldn't have a calculator on you at all times. I have to point that out to my parents sometimes. I do carry my calculator at all times.
That's so. Right. You carry the world around with you.
Absolutely.
Well, it's certainly a successful beer.
1.055.
Okay. All right. So about 5.5-6% alcohol, something around there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I shoot for.
It's very nice. And it if you had any, so we have low hopping, lots of ginger, Belgian yeast. Rye brings it all out. Anything else that you can give as hints to the home brewer to have a nicely ginger beer like this?
I mean, I'd just scale it to how much you like ginger. We constantly have people tell us there's not enough, and other people telling us there's too much. It seems like it's such a really specific flavor. The people that love it love it. A lot of them want to see more, some of them want to see less, or just don't like ginger. But if you really love ginger, go for it. Like, it's you're not going to not enjoy it.
It's a flavor that's I don't know, maybe the best way to say it is it's very stable. And, you know, if that's what you want in your beer, I think it's actually one of the few flavors that I can take in a really a dramatic way in a beer. I feel that a lot of flavored beers, by the time I'm at the end of the beer, I'm kind of done with the flavor. And the ginger beer, I feel like it holds out the whole way.
And you guys serving food as well? It pairs well with certain foods.
Well, it's been very popular at sushi restaurants, to outside accounts, obviously. And we recently actually had an event at Crystal Bridges where it got paired with an Asian-style barbecue sauce on some ribs that apparently went really well. We were going to CBC at the time, but apparently that was really, really good. So that kind of like salty, savory type of stuff, it can, anything you'd have ginger with, really. Oh, and we mentioned the rye, but also crystallized rye. Is very good at it.
Very nice. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks again to Daniel and Sammy at Apple Blossom Brewing Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Homebrewer Dan McCarthy and our own Steve Wilkes. All those beers really tasty. And I recommend that you play with ginger as an ingredient in your recipes. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. If there's a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Camco Taste Pure Water Filter with Flexible Hose Protector. Camping season is coming up. And Porcelain Mortar and Pestle with Pour Spout Large. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on our Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is brought by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.